Anger. It explodes all around us every day. I bet we could spend the next couple of hours here swapping stories of all the angry people we've seen just this week. Of course, we're not the angry ones. We didn't get angry this week, right? Just a few days ago, a woman was driving right on my bumper, scowling at me because I was going 35 miles an hour on John Tyler. She was apparently in a great big hurry and just didn't know that I can't afford another speeding ticket. And then there was that man in the bank the other day yelling at the poor teller. I felt sorry for both of them. The news is certainly full of anger. People beating and shooting their neighbors, nations and tribes bombing and destroying each other. Anger expressed as an outward attack is obviously harmful, but so is unexpressed anger. This is that anger that quietly mushrooms into resentment and bitterness. It may not draw blood or break bones, but it will do harm. It harms the soul of the one who keeps it in so tightly, and it harms all of the relationships that person tries to have. In his poem, A Poison Tree by William Blake, he describes how this kind of anger grows. I was angry with my friend. I told my wrath, and my wrath did end. I was angry with my foe. I told it not, and my wrath did grow. I watered it with fears, night and morning with my tears. I sunned it with my smiles and with soft, deceitful wiles, and it grew both day and night. Quiet, seething anger builds up inside and grows into a hard, bitter fruit that obscures the pure heart and blocks our connection to the divine. Clearly, this world would be a much better place if we could just get rid of all the anger, right? Haven't we all heard the wise teachers throughout time warn us against the perils of anger? Didn't Jesus preach from the mountaintop, "Yet I say unto you that everyone who is angry with his brother shall be liable to judgment"? And didn't the Buddha say that the instant we feel anger, we have already ceased striving for the truth and have begun striving for ourselves? That's a really good one. The instant we feel anger, we have already ceased seeking for the truth. We have begun striving for ourselves. I know a lot of us, too many of us, have had horrible experiences with either our own out-of-control anger or the destructive anger of our, you name it, mothers, fathers, spouses, co-workers. We just want anger out of our lives. The renowned Buddhist scholar Robert Thurman supports this impulse, saying that our goal must be to conquer anger entirely. Anger, he writes, is inevitably destructive, never justified, and never useful. But people have been trying to conquer anger for thousands and thousands of years, yet it is still with us. So maybe, just maybe, there is an important lesson in all of this. There's an important reason that it persists. When I want to understand something about human nature, I turn to the authority of human experience. What does the text of a human life reveal? Read carefully, they reveal complex, ambiguous, and often contradictory lessons about life. Jesus may have preached that all who are angry will be judged, but he was mighty angry when he turned over the tables of the money changers in the temple, and he was more than a little annoyed at his disciples' lack of faith. I once saw Thich Nhat Hanh angry. the Vietnamese Buddhist master, now over 80 years of age, was giving a Dharma talk in a large hall full of about 500 people. A man walked in, interrupting the talk, complaining about something that had happened to him. And the venerable monk was visibly annoyed. That trademark smile disappeared from his face. I watched him very carefully as he gently, yet very firmly, drew a line of separation. No, this is not acceptable behavior. I am offended, and you need to leave. He showed us all that day that even a Buddhist can employ the fire of anger just as long as it is tempered by compassion. Having read the sacred text of human lives, including my own, I've come to see that anger can give us important information. Anger points to hidden truths. Anger hints at hidden power. Thurman goes on to teach us that as soon as irritation, annoyance, or disapproval bursts into an irresistible impulse to respond in a harmful manner, at that moment, you have become an involuntary instrument of anger. At that moment, you have become the instrument of anger. What if, instead of letting ourselves be an instrument of anger, we could turn anger into an instrument that serves our soul? What if we could learn to let our anger reveal the deeper truths of our inner lives? I think most of us understand that when we get angry, there is something else going on. There's always something else going on at a deeper level. Anger can obscure fear and grief and woundedness. And if we're not willing to look more carefully, then all we have is the surface layer of this outrage and temper. When I was a child, I spoke like a child, and I got angry like a child. I didn't have the ability to stop, look deeply, ask myself questions. Children just feel their emotions, and then they immediately move into action. They bite and hit and yell and scream and cry. But when we become spiritually mature, we develop the capacity to slow things down. And then we develop the capacity to tell the truth about what is happening. We can then step back and see that we are not our anger. And then we're able to express that anger in a way that is honest and impactful and yet not hurtful. From the perspective of a witness or a bystander, that person over there that explodes into anger is often seen as an out-of-control person, someone we just need to get rid of or push to the margins of society. Oh, he is such an angry person. Or, I can't stand it when she goes off like that. If you're going to be this angry, I am not going to listen to you. Do you see how comments like this shut down the telling of truth? Do you see how these judgments harden the heart of the listener and block the flow of compassion? Moving from this interpersonal to a more broad social dynamic, we can see that the same thing has been used and continues to be used by people who have power over people who have very little power. Feminist theologian Sharon Welch puts it this way: the most effective defense mechanism of those in power is the inability to tolerate the rage of those they have oppressed. This is an inability to hear what is being expressed in that rage, the fact that they have been violated to the core of their being, their dignity as a human being. The self-righteous rejection of rage as a legitimate form of expression is itself a perpetuation of the cause of rage. It's a way of denying the dignity of the peoples they have violated. Just because we may be uncomfortable with anger doesn't mean that we should turn away from it. After all, it may reveal something very interesting, some very interesting truths, maybe inconvenient truths. It is certainly better to express anger than to stuff it just for comfort's sake. Unexpressed anger turns into the bitter fruit of resentment. It leaves little room for the flow of joy and love and compassion. Silent, seething anger blocks our connection to what Marge Piercy named the fire, the holy fire in our core. As the poet reminds us, we are given fire to see against the dark. We are given the fire to think, to see, to study how we are to live. We are given fire to bank in ourselves against defeat and despair, those things that make us forget what we must do. This holy fire in our core moves us to love and to create and to dance and, yes, to become angry. To become angry when we see the trash and the smog and the hatred and the injustice. Instead of suppressing it just because we are afraid of its fury, we can let anger become both the recognition that change is needed and the energy to make that change happen. In the 1976 movie called Network, an anchorman broadcasts his outrage right in the middle of the nightly news. "I don't have to tell you that things are bad," he growled. "Everybody knows that things are bad. Everybody's out of work or scared of losing their jobs. Banks are going bust. Shopkeepers are keeping guns under their counter. We know that the air is unfit to breathe and the food is unfit to eat. And we sit watching TV night after night while some newscaster tells us that today there were 15 homicides and 63 violent acts, as if that's the way it's supposed to be. We know things are bad, worse than bad, but I don't want you to protest. I don't want you to riot. I don't want you to call your congressman because I wouldn't even know what to tell you to say. All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, 'I'm a human being, damn it, my life has value.' Things have got to change, but first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, 'I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take it anymore.'" I am not prepared to get rid of that kind of anger. In fact, I think we need more of that kind of energy. "I'm as mad as hell, too. Things have got to change, and fast. We can't keep destroying each other. We can't keep ignoring each other and trampling each other. But first, we've got to get mad. Anger is passion. Anger is passion fired by the flame of life. And while that flame has the potential to destroy, it also gives light and warmth. Anger can incite us to swing fists and drop bombs. It can shape words that can pierce like a bullet. And it can motivate us to challenge oppression, can arouse our compassion, can inspire us to action." Unitarian Universalists have been described as reasonable, rational, polite. We have often done the work of justice out of a sense of duty because it fits a picture we hold in our mind of what good people do. But can we also be fiery? Can we be hot-blooded and outraged and mad as hell? I want to be gentle, and I want to be angry. I have been too quiet. too willing to damp down my rising flames of anger, afraid that something might get out of control, wanting everything to be calm. But you know what? That is not how I want to live my life. That is not how I want to live this one wild life I've been given. I want to live close to that flame. Now I know that living close to the fire can be dangerous. Even righteous anger can easily burn out of control, and even righteous indignation can be used to justify violence. And so the medieval theologian Thomas Aquinas warned, anger is good insofar as it is regulated by reason, whereas it is evil if it set the order of reason aside. But you know what? Reason is not sufficient. Love must accompany reason. Love and reason can temper the hot steel of anger. Love and reason can transform anger from a tool of war to a tool of peace. We do indeed stand in the midst of a burning world. We are primed to burn with compassionate love and justice. We are primed to turn inward and find that holy fire at the core. And we can see under the trash and through the smog, we can see the candles lit by our ancestors. Our ancestors lit flames for us because the creation of justice is a task of generations. Our ancestors lit flames for us because we need fire in our bellies. We need fire to make this world a more peaceful, more compassionate, more loving place. This holy flame burns inside each one of you. Let it shine, let it shine, let it shine.